Be here again and to tell you about what I've been doing in the past few years and what I plan to do for the next few years or so. So the central subject of my study is to understand when you have a macroscopic number, say thousands, millions, or even more quantum mechanical particles put together and interacting with each other, what can happen in a condensed matter system. So because of this quantum mechanical nature of these degrees of freedom, various quantum phases can form in this solid or liquid systems. And we have known them for larger half of a century. And for many of the phases, we do have a pretty well understanding of them, say like superfluid, superconductor, or a quantum magnet. But however, starting from like 30 years ago, new phases have been discovered, which falls totally outside of our conventional understanding of quantum phases. So, and in order to understand these unconventional condensed matter system with quantum mechanical, macroscopic quantum mechanical properties, we need very unconventional thinking. So today my talk will be how ideas from a totally seemingly totally unrelated area of study, quantum information theory, can contribute to the development of understanding of unconventional condensed matter systems. So my talk will have three parts. First, I'll say what we know about conventional condensed matter system and what we want to know about the unconventional ones. What are their differences and what is the key feature? And then I'll talk about what we have achieved using this quantum information perspective to understand unconventional phases, especially phases with a gap between the ground state and all the excitations. And finally, I will conclude and give an outlook on where we're supposed to go from here. What's the larger goal for my study? So first of all, let me talk something about the background. It was discovered in the 1930s that when you cool a quantum mechanical system down to very low temperature, there can be very surprising features like superfluidity appearing in a fluid system that the fluid actually flow without any friction through a container or something. And it was soon realized that this kind of flow without friction can be well understood as a Bose-Einstein condensate of all the bosonic atoms in the fluid medium. That is, every bosonic atom in the fluid finds the lowest energy level it can be, that is the zeroth energy level, and everyone sits there. So it's a macroscopic condensation of bosonic particles in this single particle state. So this is how people understand superfluidity. And on the other hand, well, there are other quantum systems like a quantum magnet. You can have atoms sitting on a lattice, not moving, but however, each atom still have a spin degree of freedom, which can point up or point down. And due to the interaction between the spins, there can be a ferromagnetic phase or anti-ferromagnetic phase. For example, if all the spins point in the same direction, if the energy prefers spins to point in the same direction, then it enters a ferromagnetic phase. If they prefer spins to align in opposite directions on neighboring bonds, then the phase will be an anti-ferromagnetic order. And for these kind of systems, we do have a very good understanding of them. And the key features of all the superfluidity and the quantum magnets is that for each single particle, there is a well-defined quantum state, either the bosonic quantum state or the spin quantum state. And the many-body state is simply a tensor product of them, of all the quantum, of whatever number of particles you can have in a system, and this can be a very large number. But however, starting from 30 years ago, we realized that this is not the end of story. And quantum mechanical systems can be far more complicated than that. Basically, there can be many body states which cannot be understood, even qualitatively, in this way. So there are some fundamentally different quantum mechanical system which does not fall into this description. So the first example people realize is this fractional quantum Hall system, which was discovered in the 80s. When people put electrons, they confine them between two semiconductors and form a 2D electron gas. When you lower the temperature and put a huge magnetic field through the system, like this, people expected to see electrons form a solid. However, what they find is that electrons never crystallize into a solid. They form some kind of liquid phase. What is more strange about this phase is that there are fractional degrees of freedom appearing in the system. That is, if we make some excitations in the system, we see that each excitation is like a fraction of an electron. It carries, for example, 1/3 of the electron charge, or when you break them, instead of getting if you exchange two of the excitations, instead of getting a minus one phase, you get an e to the I pi over 3 phase. So that's like exactly like 1/3 of an electron. And people call this kind of strange behavior in the fractional quantum Hall system a kind of topological order. And obviously, this kind of behavior cannot appear if the system is simply a collection of electrons, because in that case, all the excitations will be just a whole electron, not a fraction of them. And we know that the temperature is not high enough to actually break the electron down to quarks. So something weird must be happening in the system. And it actually happens in much more simpler system if you consider one-dimensional spin one chains with anti-ferromagnetic order, anti-ferromagnetic interactions between them. And people find, actually, Haldane first conjectured in 1984 that in a spin one chain with anti-ferromagnetic interaction, they do not form an anti-ferromagnetic order like this, not up, down, up, down. Actually, the system has no magnetic order whatsoever, and the system is gapped. There's a ground state, and there's a finite excitation to all the excited states. Moreover, there are spin one half, that is, fractionalized degree of freedom at the edge. And at first, people don't believe this result. They say, how can this happen? If you have anti-ferromagnetic order interaction, you should have anti-ferromagnetic order. But actually, this is not the case in spin one. More interestingly, when you go to two dimension, if you imagine that you have an anti-ferromagnetic interaction on a triangular lattice, there are no simple spin pattern that can satisfy, can minimize the energy of all anti-ferromagnetic interactions. For example, if this one is pointing up, this one will, in order to minimize the energy on this connection, this one prefers to point down. But however, the third one at the other vertex of the triangle doesn't know where to point. No matter where it points, it cannot minimize the energy. And in fact, people have proposed that the ground state for anti-ferromagnets on a triangular lattice does not have magnetic order and is something called a spin liquid. And it is interesting to think about these phases, not only because it's conceptually challenging to imagine what is happening, but also because these kind of systems have been discovered in experiments and it can be very relevant to what we are confused about in many quantum mechanical systems. For example, in the fractional quantum Hall system, there are various different kinds of fractional quantum Hall systems discovered in experiments, and the theory for these unconventional phases is required to understand what kind of order there is in all these fractional quantum Hall systems. And moreover, another major topic in the condensed matter community is high temperature superconductivity. And usually, the conventional superconductivity have been well understood in the single particle picture. But however, there are certain superconducting materials which exhibit transition temperature high above the energy that can be explained in the conventional theory. And people have long known this has to be related to all the unconventional phenomena we see, but up to now, there is no consistent a theory that everyone agrees to, which explains why high-temperature superconductivity appears and predicts in what kind of material we can have, say, room-temperature superconductivity. And that is a big topic in condensed matter theory. And so this is the motivation from the condensed matter theory part. And more interestingly, all the unconventional phases have found application in quantum computation. Because of their strange, exotic quantum mechanical properties, we can make use of them to do quantum computation. And because these kind of properties appear in a macroscopic system, which is highly resistant to all the local perturbations in noise you can have on the system, this, if you can use them to do quantum computation, the computation process can be highly resistant to error. So, but for me, a simpler motivation is just to realize that actually we only understand a tiny fraction of what can happen in the world of many-body quantum mechanics. We know some scattered faces, so the whole phase diagram is like a blank sheet, except for these points. And it will be interesting to explore what can be there and what is the structure of the phase diagram. So this, so the question more particularly that we want to understand is what unconventional phases are possible, what universal properties they can have, and what is the relation between them, and what the phase transition especially is like when we transit from one unconventional phase to the other. And so the general practice in condensed matter theory to deal with this problem is to say, well, this is a many-body problem, but let us assume that we can do a zeroth-order approximation and still treat it as a collection of single-body problems. This is the general practice of mean field approximation. So the simplest example of a mean field approximation is if you can think of anti-ferromagnetism. Instead of due to the interaction between spins where they want to anti-align with each other, but instead think of anti-ferromagnetism as spin coupled to alternating fields, that magnetic fields pointing down on this spin and magnetic field pointing up on the neighboring spin. So this is the simplest case where mean field theory can reduce many-body problem to a collection of single-body problems. And it's actually quite surprising that for some of the conventional unconventional phases that we discover, like fractional quantum Hall or spin liquid, the theory can produce results beyond what we already know in conventional phases. Well, we have to be very clever about what single-body problems we treat and how we couple them, all these kind of things. But there's always a problem to this approximation that we need to answer, that is, when is this approximation valid? Is this general enough? And are we sure that we are not missing anything? So, so why don't we just take a step back and think of what we are dealing with? There are various words that people describe these unconventional phases with, like frustrated or spin liquid, fractionalized, or topological order. Some of the words like frustrated, I think it better describes people's feeling towards solving this problem rather than the problem itself. But if you think about it, what these words all mean is that the wave function of the system, the ground state wave function of the system, is not a product state of all single particle wave functions. Instead, in quantum mechanics, we know there are other possibilities that that the wave function is a superposition of all product states. So this is a more, of course, a more general way to write down wave functions. But in quantum information, this is what we say, that the particles in this many-body system has many-body entanglement in it. So many-body entanglement is a general feature of all the unconventional phases that we're dealing with, whether we call it topological order or frustrated. Yes?
So this is a good question. How do you find that frustration implies Schmidt rank greater than 1?
Yes.
Frustration always implies entanglement.
Well, frustration basically implies that you do not have a classical pattern which satisfies the energy everywhere. Yes. Well, I'm talking about quantum system with a ground state. So if you think about quantum system enter the ground state, where the ground state is not a product state, then it's a many-body entangled state. Okay. So many-body entanglement turns out to be a key feature of all the unconventional phases we're dealing with. And then, well, the natural thing to do is to deal with many-body entanglement to face the many-body entanglement problem in these unconventional phases and deal with straightly. But however, many-body entanglement was not built in the usual kinetic matter language to deal with things. But however, it is studied in a different area, that is quantum information. Quantum information has been working on entanglement for a long time. And the starting point of quantum information has to deal with entanglement, where all the algorithms or coding started from. And luckily for me, when I first went to MIT, I learned entanglement from Ike, where he taught everything you ever want to know about entanglement. Of course, I can't say I remember anything, but I do remember something very simple, which enabled me to, as a starting point, to do some interesting stuff for unconventional kinetic matter phases. So I'll be telling you about how we started from very simple entanglement building blocks and achieve new understanding about these topological phases. So the second part is about how we use this many-body entanglement approach to construct new phases to classify all possible phases in certain cases, not in all cases, and how we can have a better understanding of the structure of the phase diagram in this way. And my work for now has been focused on quantum phases with a gap, that is the ground state and excited states has a finite energy between them. Okay, so the simplest entanglement there can be, if you take two spin 1/2, which can either point up or point down, and if you were at Ike's colloquium yesterday, you would know that you can shine a laser on them and do a unitary transformation and put them into an entangled state. The simplest entangled state you can ever imagine for two spin 1/2 is a singlet. That is, it's a up, down, minus, down, up state. This is the simplest entangled state. Well, what we can do with simple things like that, we can construct a many-body state out of this entangled singlets just by putting them together, head to tail, like connecting them into a one-dimensional chain. And the entanglement, because it's only between nearest neighbors, we call this type of entanglement short-range entanglement, just in a very intuitive way. Well, you may say, this looks too trivial. How can this be of any importance? Well, it does, because it actually gives a very nice understanding of why spin one chain does not have magnetic order if you have anti-ferromagnetic interaction between neighboring spin ones. Actually, the way to understand this is proposed by Affleck, Kennedy, Lieb, and Tasaki, that each spin one, you can think of it as splitting into two parts, into two spin 1/2, a left one and the right one. And each spin 1/2 in the splitting will connect with another spin 1/2 on a neighboring side and form a singlet, like this. And the total state is just a bunch of singlets put together. So, and this picture, from this picture, we can easily understand what's going on in spin 1 anti-ferromagnetic chains. First of all, in the bulk of the system, everything forms singlets, and there will be a gap from the singlets to all the triplet excitations. So naturally, the bulk of the system is gapped. And moreover, there's no magnetic order because everything's a singlet. It's totally rotationally invariant if you do spin rotation to the system. So you don't see a magnetic order of any kind. And more interestingly, if you cut the system open, then there will be a spin 1/2 left on the edge, which is not coupled to anything. And one on this side, one on that side. So we will see a fractional spin 1/2 degree of freedom at the edge. And this is exactly what people find in this spin 1 anti-ferromagnetic chain. So when Haldane proposed that this is the case for spin 1 chains, people don't understand it. And it was called the Haldane conjecture for several years. But from this picture, using very simple entanglement building blocks, we can have a very easy understanding of what is going on. Well,
does this require that the spin ones are complicated?
Sorry?
Does this require that you're representing the spin ones using spin half?
Yes.
But does it require that the spin ones are complicated?
The spin ones are just spin ones. This is just a theoretical way we understand what's going on. It's the wave function, you can...
But when you represent the spin ones with spin half,
yes.
You're introducing other states as well. Right?
No, actually, what is did by these people is that the wave function, you can think of it as composed of singlets. Then on each side will be a four-dimensional Hilbert space, as you pointed out. But actually, you can project to the spin one subspace without changing the phase. Yeah, that's a very good point. Thanks.
So you kind of work in a bigger space, but then project.
Yes. The projection is kind of irrelevant. You can don't change the phase of it. Okay, so you might say that still this looks quite trivial. Why can't you just undo the unitary entangling operation that we previously did and put each of the singlet into a total product state, which looks totally trivial and there's nothing there? Well, this is not possible if you have spin rotation symmetry, because somehow singlets is the only possible state with rotation symmetry with rotation symmetry for two spin one halves. And there's no product states for two spin one halves, which is rotationally invariant. And although that's a very simple observation, it's the key point in this, what we call the symmetry protected topological order. That is, if you have rotation symmetry in the system, the entanglement cannot be removed. The entanglement is intrinsic to this many-body system. And one of the key features of the symmetry protected topological order is that you have fractional degrees of freedom on the edge. And actually, what we are able to find is that all one-dimensional spin chains with all kind of interactions and all kind of correlations will have this form. That is, if we start from a one-dimensional spin chain where there's a gap, then we can always change the entanglement structure in the state by applying a bunch of local unitaries. Well, we may not be able to do this with only one layer of unitary. We may need another layer to modify the entanglement, say, between these two particles. And we can also go on for a finite time. But what we find is that we can apply a finite layer of local unitary transformations in order to put the state into this structure. That is, whatever spin chains we start with, as long as it has a gap in the spectrum, the state can be mapped to this to this kind of entanglement structure through a local unitary circuit with a finite layer. And this is what we call in quantum information a local unitary circuit with a finite depth. The depth meaning that how many layers I have here. So every state, I can do this and put it into a structure where you have 2 degrees of freedom for each site, and one of them is connected with another one into an entangled state on a neighboring site. And moreover, there will be degrees of freedom left on the edge, which tells you what kind of symmetry protected topological order you have in the system. And actually, this kind of structure, because it works for every gap spin chain, we can ask not only for spin rotation symmetry, but actually for any symmetry of group G, what kind of symmetry protected topological order we can have. The kind of symmetry protected topological order will be manifested on the edge by this edge degree of freedom, which carries a so-called projective representation, which is like a spin one half representation of spin rotation. And with this observation, we were able to classify all symmetry protected topological orders in one dimension. That is, you give me a symmetry, and I can tell you how many number of different symmetry protected topological orders there can be. For example, if there are no symmetry, we have one phase, the trivial phase, everything being a product state. If we have spin rotation, we have a possibility of having this Haldane chain type of non-trivial order, but we can also have a trivial order. And with time rules, we also have two. With spatial, like a parity, spatial reflection, we can have two. And with translation plus parity, you can have four, and so on and so forth. Yes, actually for not space-time ones, spatial. Well, if you can combine time reversal and these spatial transformations. Yes, basically what we find is that, yeah, so this spin rotation and time growth, so they're actually internal. A spin rotation or Z2 Ising symmetry, they're actually internal symmetries. Yes. Oh, so the answer to that question is that you give me a group G, which describes the internal symmetry. The classification is given by the projective representation of that group.
Yeah,
yeah, that includes applies to everything. Well, Haldane chain is an example of every one of them, but you can have more. So you can find it in different systems, not necessarily spin one, but other spins with different interactions.
So the Haldane chain is the non-trivial case for all three?
Yes. Yes.
But you could have one that was non-trivial in one, but trivial in the other.
Yeah, exactly.
So the rules of the game is that you first specify what symmetry you want to talk about, and then you have a classification.
Yes. So so the next step, naturally, is to go to higher dimension and say, can we use similar ideas to construct something interesting in two dimension? Well, in one dimension, we were building on these entangled pairs and put them together. Then in two dimension, if you have, say, a square lattice, then naturally the thing to think about is to say, okay, each side, the degrees of freedom on each side will split into four parts, and the four parts will form entangled plaquettes and cover the whole system like that. So the whole system is still a tensor product of local entangled states, and just like what we had in one dimension. Well, here, what we chose to be the local entangled state is the famous GHC state in quantum information, which has been used widely in all kinds of protocols, which is the four particles being in the 0, 0, 0, 0 plus 1, 1, 1, 1 state. And of course, we need to also define a symmetry on the system. Otherwise, this kind of entanglement can be locally removed, just like in one dimension. We need a symmetry which protects this kind of short-range entangled structure in the ground state. And in designing the symmetry, we actually use another thing in quantum information, which is a control Z gate, which applies a phase factor when both of these spin one halves are in a one state. So I don't want to go into the details about this model, but basically tell you what we get and why it's an interesting result. So basically, using this kind of line of thought, we were able to construct exactly solver models which has a symmetry protected topological order in spin or bosonic system in two and higher dimension. And so the general feature of all these constructed states is that they have short-range entanglement in the bulk because the wave function is just a product of local entangled states. But however, we can show that on the boundary, if you have symmetry, then the boundary of the system is gapless. Well, why this result is interesting is because this kind of feature has generated a lot of excitement in the kinesmatic community in the past 6 or 7 years, which is known as the topological insulators and topological superconductors. Topological insulators and superconductors share the same feature as the models we construct, that they have a gap in the bulk. They're insulators. But however, you have a boundary on the system, whether it's a two-dimensional, whether it's a one-dimensional boundary of two-dimensional system, or whether it's a two-dimensional boundary of a three-dimensional system, then the boundary is gapless. And the gapless boundary cannot be gapped without breaking the symmetry in the system. And the system caught quite excitement in the community also because it was soon realized in experimental system. And for topological insulators and superconductors, people made a discovery in free fermion system, where fermions just fill the band structure one by one like that. But however, it was not known that this kind of order can also appear in bosonic system, because in a bosonic system, in the usual way of kinesmatic thinking, if they don't interact, then everything will be sitting in the lowest energy level in a Boson-Condon state, in the ground state. And nothing special can happen, not like fermions, which can fuel band structures. Bosons only sit at the lowest energy level. And also for spin states, if spins don't interact, then they just point in whatever direction they like. And there's nothing special about that kind of states. So it was not known that bosons or spins can also have the same kind of order like in topological insulators and superconductors. So that's a big unknown. And also one thing that kinetic matter people were interested in is what happens if you have strong interaction in the system. Whether this kind of feature are still stable if you have really strong interaction in the system, not just perturbatively, because we know that strong interaction do exist in quantum systems. And on the other hand, are there new phases with this kind of feature if you have strong interactions in the system? And that did happen when we studied like quantum Hall system. We know that with very strong interaction, you can have fractional quantum Hall instead of integer quantum Hall in a kinetic matter system. So these are all unknown questions, and people didn't know what to do with it, because starting from this free electron, free particle picture, you can add perturbations, but it doesn't change the picture qualitatively. Yes.
So is it only for hardcore bosons?
Yeah, hardcore bosons. Yeah, thanks. So what we were able to do is to say there are indeed phases in boson or spin system with this kind of symmetry protected topological order, just like in topological insulators and superconductors in any dimension and with any symmetry. Well, some of them don't have a non-trivial phase, but basically for many of the symmetries, we discovered new phases. Everything listed here is new because it doesn't exist in a free particle system, sorry. And we were able to systematically construct symmetry protected topological order in strongly interacting boson spin system. And this is a generalization to what we had in one dimension, where we used this projective representation to classify things. And in higher dimension, it turns out the mathematics is group cohomology. And we were able to prove using tensor network techniques that actually these kind of phases all have gapless edge, which is stable under arbitrary interaction. And these are all unknown in the topological insulator and superconductor stories. Okay, so we have obtained more understanding for the class of states with short-range entanglement. That is, instead of just knowing the conventional part and the spin one chain or topological insulators, which I didn't draw here, we actually know there are many other phases, and we have a pretty good picture of what the structure is like. We know within every dimension and with every symmetry how many phases there are and what properties they have. And so this gives us almost a classification of a symmetry protected topological order in short-range entangled system. And then the question is, we want to move on to something more non-trivial and ask, for systems with longer range entanglement, how do we think about them? First, how far away are they? How much more complicated are they than the short range ones? Well, the short range ones, we can just imagine them as a direct product of local entangled building blocks. But how do we think of the long range entangled states, like a fractional quantum Hall or spin liquid? So a very good way to think of many body entanglement is to start from product states where there are no entanglement and build things up. So as we have seen that if we apply local unitaries, we can create entanglement between all these particles. If we apply one layer of unitary, we can create a bunch of singlet states. If we apply another layer, we can create more complicated entangled states. But the point is that if we do this for only a finite layer, that is a finite depth local unitary circuit, we can only get short-range entangled states because the entanglement that can be created cannot go very far. And then for long-range entangled states, it's interesting to ask, what is the circuit depth you need to go from a total product state in order to achieve, to create the many-body entangled states you want? And this kind of idea has been brought up as a very important notion by people here like Guthrie in the study of many-body systems. And we want to ask the simple question that if I want to go to just the next many-body entangled state with long-range interaction with long-range entanglement, how many layers of unitaries I need to do? So this is the simplest one is the so-called Makarona chain proposed by Professor Kitaev in 2000, where you can think it's a one-dimensional system of fermions, where you can imagine that each fermion mode splits into two Makarona modes. So you can do C plus C dagger and C minus C dagger, and the fermion, each fermion will split into two Makarona fermions like this. And then the Makarona fermions can form new fermion modes, but in an alternating way. So we will couple this Makarona fermion with this one and form a new fermion mode. Then in the resulting state, what is surprising is that there will be Makarona mode at the end of the chain. And the Makarona mode is nothing like what we have seen, because in, say, the spin one chain, we know there is a spin one half at the edge of chain. But the spin one half is a well-defined local Hilbert space. But however, a Makarona mode, you need to take two of them to form a single fermion mode. And a single fermion mode has only two-dimensional Hilbert space. That means the Makarona mode each have a dimension of square root of two. So it's not even a well-defined Hilbert space. What is that? And actually, even though I draw it in this way, this process is highly non-local and non-unitary, because in the final state, these two Makarona modes, they actually form effective single fermion mode, which will be either occupied or not occupied. So this bit of information of occupation, whether this fermion mode is occupied or not occupied, is shared between the two ends of the chain, which are very far away. And you cannot possibly transmit information from this end to that end by just doing these two steps. So the question to ask is then, if we require the process to be unitary and to be local, how many steps of transformation we need to do in order to go from, say, a fermion product state to this non-trivial Makarona chain?
Yes, sorry. So I understand the starting point and the final point. If this represents a chain, or are we talking about a state, a ground state?
Yes, ground state.
Okay,
yes,
so
sorry.
I'm trying to understand. So you're describing a transition between one ground state and another ground state with the properties that you just described.
Yes.
And you're asking how to go from one case to the other.
Yes.
To a local quantum state.
Yes.
Okay. And yes, you're arguing that this is non-unitary? I don't understand what you mean by
This picture I draw here is not unitary, but you can do it in a unitary way.
This picture, I don't understand. I thought the picture meant starting initial state, final state, and some process in between.
Yeah, just this way of drawing that fermion mode splits into two Makarona modes, and then they combine to another fermion mode. If you want to do it in two steps, I'm just saying that if you want to do it in two steps, it's not unitary.
So what's and the non-local state in the middle?
It's not a real estate.
Okay.
Expert question. I just want to draw pictures and hide all the details. Yeah. But yeah, good.
But
thanks.
The whole process will be unitary. Yeah. Just you are asking,
yes,
if you want to how do you make the process, how many gates, how do you make
it? Indeed. Indeed. So the next picture will be unitary.
So perhaps there shouldn't be arrows on the previous picture. There's some relationship.
Some relationship.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, thanks. So so this picture is unitary. And we start from a fermionic product state where all the fermion modes are, say, unoccupied. So it's a total vacuum. And then we ask, how do we do a unitary process in order to get to this Makarona state? Well, the things we can do is that first we do it step by step. We take two fermion modes and split the two Makarona modes by one lattice site. And then we hop it again by another lattice site. You can do this step by step, but obviously this way of doing things requires a linear circuit depth in order to go from this state to another state. Well, this sounds like a very inefficient way of doing things because we're not doing things in parallel. But actually, as proved by a student who I'm working with at Berkeley, he showed that the linear depth is the lower bound. You cannot do any faster than a linear depth. You need at least that kind of depth of the circuit to end up in the Majorana chain. Is there a question? Yes.
Is each of them having nano operators or something nano space?
Sorry?
Is each of them having nano space or something nano operators?
Something states. So this is a transformation from one state to another state.
I don't understand what the Majorana thing actually means.
Sorry?
In the second book, for example, is something with atomonial one of the two Majoranas.
Yeah, that's a good point. So you may think that this is not a local Hilbert space that how can you act on it? Well, you can bring another, you can take another Majorana mode and make it a local Hilbert space and act on it. Effectively, it only acts on the algebra, the operator in this Majorana mode, but it is indeed a unitary acting on local Hilbert space. Okay, so this gives us an idea of how far away we are, the long-range entangled states are from the short-range entangled ones. In order to go from here to interesting ones here, we need to go through a linear depth local unitary circuit. So that gives us a better measure of distance in this diagram.
Can you back up one picture again?
Yes.
So in the first line to the second line, you have a unitary that takes two zeros into two Majoranas.
Yeah, so a more precise way of saying this is that on this one will be in a zero state, also unoccupied, and these two form a fermion mode, which is not occupied. But they have exchange locality.
But then U dagger U dagger would take that bottom configuration and turn it into two zeros, right?
Yeah, take this one to the, actually this is the state of 0, 0 plus 1, 1. Writing in this way.
Okay.
Yeah, I can tell you more about maybe later.
One thing that might be confusing is that actually this U, it has to be outgrowing white.
That's true.
Not in the spread, so it just acts on.
That's
but
true.
That's all.
Thanks.
You say that,
okay. Yeah, and there's another leg here.
Yes.
Good point.
That's not what I'm thinking about. So for the linear lower bound, I mean, so how would you say, okay, I don't want to do a linear lower bound. I'm going to do it locally. I'm going to do this thing where I make pairs with Majoranas, and then I'll try to merge them together. I'm trying to understand why.
You mean why this?
Because,
why this is not allowed?
Why not do that?
Because if you actually write things down, this is not a unitary transformation. What do you mean by splitting?
Well, so the first row looks like it's doing all those U's that you wanted.
You mean this here?
No.
So to get from the first row to the second row here,
yeah,
it's like doing the U, that was the first row.
Well,
in the other one, that's everywhere. And the second row looks like it's just doing the U dagger is everywhere.
Yeah, the point is that the U here need to act on two fermion modes. Well, if you remember that for fermion mode, if you apply unitary transformation, you cannot mix up the even and oddness of the fermion. So if you apply it to a single fermion mode, there's not actually a unitary you can do. But with two fermion modes, 0, 0, and you can make it a superposition of 0, 0, and 1, 1. And that's the point. So,
So I understand this small distinction, but why not just take the first row and divide it up into pairs and do the U on each pair?
Yeah.
Divide it up into pairs. Oh,
okay, good. That's a good point. So what you end up with, so say you apply U here, apply U here,
yeah,
then you end up with the Majorana mode here and the Majorana mode here.
Right.
But the second process is not unitary either, because that's the U dagger of this one. It doesn't work that way. It's just
we'll start
because
the other end. How about
you start the other end? Majorana, fermion, Majorana.
Well, if I can do that, then this lower linear depth proof is wrong. Well,
is it correct to say that the key thing is that you are implicitly, well, you said it's a fermionic system, so you have parity preserving.
Yes.
So if you don't allow, if you remove the constraint of
that cannot be removed in your fermion.
No, I know, but you
that's a good question.
In one step,
yes.
Or two steps.
Yes. Yes.
Right. So
yes.
It's a symmetry protector.
But we don't call it this because in fermion parity you cannot break it in any way. Yeah.
But I'm so, saying that if you could, then you would go in one step.
Good point.
Parity,
good
right?
point.
And
yeah.
that's the key point that you
yeah.
cannot break.
Yeah.
No, sorry, I still don't understand. I mean, you said that the second row represents the 0, 1 plus 1, 0 state, but it's not the same parity as 0, 0.
No, it's 0, 0 plus 1, 1 state.
No, it's 0, 0 plus 1.
Yeah. And if you imagine that you do another one, oh, I said that, so you have two Mahalanobis modes neighboring, which you want to combine into a single mode, which is not a unitary thing to do. Okay, so we understand that we have a short-range entangled part to the diagram. We have a long-range entangled part to the diagram. And in order to go from one to the other, you need a linear depth circuit. And actually, it was proven by Ravi Hastings and Verstrada that if you have more complicated system, more complicated long-range topological orders, like a fractional quantum Hall spin liquid, which have degeneracy on a torus, then on a manifold with a non-trivial topology, then all these kind of long-range entanglement will have a linear distance from all the short-range entangled ones. So that means there's at least such a distance in between. Linear in system size. It's a one side L.
Volume or
length?
Length.
Yes. So each long-range entangled topological state actually form a world of its own, just like the set of short-range entangled states, because on top of this long-range entangled pattern, we can do local unitaries and change the local details of the short-range entanglement without affecting long-range entangled pattern. So everything here is like is as complicated as the state of short-range entangled states over there. And you may want to ask that, is there any internal structure to this, like what we did for the short-range entangled ones? And then of course, if you don't put extra requirements on the system, then everything can be connected. But however, just like for short-range entangled states, if the system has extra symmetry on top of the topology of the system, are there more faces? And this is the question that I've been working on a lot recently, which is a fascinating question. It is important to experiment on spin liquid because lately, there has been exciting developments at Yang Li's group at MIT where they have realized spin liquids in a type of Herbert-Schmidt type of single crystal. The theoretical question to answer is then, what is the spin liquid that we have discovered? And because the system under study has various symmetries, like a spin rotation or lattice symmetries, a particular kind of lattice, or time reversal symmetry, would be. And the question that experimentalists ask is, which one of the spin liquid am I seeing in this experiment? And for theorists, we want to answer more than that. That is, what are all the faces possible if you have symmetry on top of the topology in this kind of system? What faces are possible? And this question has been studied in various different ways, like a projective symmetry group, K-matrix, and or category theory. And here, we take the many-body entanglement perspective and understand as this must result from the interplay between short-range and long-range entanglement patterns in the system. So how can they interact with each other? I don't have much time, do I?
5 more minutes?
Huh?
5 more minutes?
5 more minutes, okay. So...
oh, we start building later.
Yeah, okay. So... There are different ways you can think of combining long-range entangled patterns with short-range entangled ones. For example, the option one is that, say, you start with a long-range entanglement pattern. It's just some pictorial illustration. And what you can do is that you bring a copy with a short-range entanglement and attach them together. Of course, this sounds quite trivial and not very interesting. A more interesting thing to do is to say, I want to go inside this long-range entanglement and allow more intimate interplay between the short and long-range entanglement patterns. And I can give you an example of how this works. Since I have some extra time, I think I'll do this example, which is a lattice Z2 gauge theory, or more commonly known in quantum information theory as the Torrey code. The Torrey code is a cubic model on a square lattice where you have 0 and 1 on each degree of freedom, and they sit on the links of the square lattice. And so if there's a 0, we can imagine that this represents the link with no string. But if there's a 1, then the link will be covered by a string. So in this way, we can form closed loops on the ground state wave function like this. And the ground state wave function of this model will be a superposition of all kinds of loop configurations. Like, for example, there can be no loop, there can be a small loop, there can be a big loop, there can be multiple loops. And it's a superposition of all possible kinds of loop configurations. So this is one possible pattern of long-range entanglement that you can have in a many-body system with a gap. And so the interesting feature of this state is that the excitations in the state are kind of fractional. They come when you break these loops into open strings. For example, on top of the vacuum, you can have an open string like this, and together with all the other possible kind of loop configurations you can have. And this is an excited state. The ground state wave function is a superposition of all possible configurations with endpoints at these two points. And these points always appear in pairs, and they have a fractional statistic with each other. So what happens if we add, on top of this long-range entangled pattern, spin rotation symmetry to the system? And if you have a Z2 gauge theory and spin rotation symmetry, you get a Z2, what people call a Z2 spin liquid. And we can, so now, one way to add this short-range entangled structure to this long-range entangled pattern is to decorate the strings with Houdin chains. As we talked about before, that you can add a spin one half, a pair of spin one halves to each link and form singlets between them. The point is that you form singlets between the neighboring links like this, and they form a closed loop. So the ground state wave function, instead of being a superposition of all the loop configurations, it becomes the superposition of all the Houdin chain loop configurations.
So the local link is a big one from spin one half to, do we want to think that instead of a qubit now we have two levels?
Yeah, you can think of it as spin one. Or you just say it's two spin one halves. The projection is irrelevant. You can have, or you do not have to have it. Yeah, it doesn't matter. If you want to write down a more realistic model, you
are you
want
about to. The wave function?
Yes, just the wave function. But the interesting thing that happens is that when I have open strings like this, where the fractional excitation in this topological order can happen, what goes along with it is that the Houdin chain is also open. And we know that when the Houdin chain is open, there's spin 1/2 degrees of freedom on the edge, at the end. This means that the fractional excitations in the Z2 gauge theory will carry fractional spin representations, that is a spin 1/2, together with them. And that is a extra twofold degeneracy together with this fractional excitation in the state. So this is a very this is a very interesting way to put short-range entanglement together with long-range entanglement. And starting generalizing this idea, starting from this, we have done a lot of work recently. So I'll just summarize what we have achieved. basically we find some new Z2 gauge theory with flux which carry symmetrical protected degeneracies in 2D or gapless excitations in 3D, because in 3D the flux are loops and they can carry gapless excitations.
Is this still a wave function?
We have Hamiltonian. Well, for this one, you can also write down a model for that. You just require that spins couple in this way when it's on a...
You're only looking at one type of excitation from the original study.
Yes. That's an interesting question. The other one can also have this kind of property, mm-hmm. as people believe, but there's no model for it yet. That's a very good question, because we think in this of a string net condensate picture that we can put things onto strings. However, the other kind of excitation is not end of strings, and what you can do about that.
So, but in the original model, in the simple model, you have a duality.
You have what?
A duality between these
classes. Well, it's a bit tricky. So, it will be very interesting to see how we can make the other excitation also carry fractional representations. And more interestingly, what we have been working on is to study topological phases with symmetry, not in the usual two-dimensional system, but in a very strange place, that is on the surface of a 3D topological insulator. That is where we know strange things must happen, because originally people, from the free fermion picture, people know that the surface of a topological insulator is not something that can be realized in two dimension, because people find there's a single Dirac cone on the surface of a 3D topological insulator, which cannot be gapped out without breaking time reversal symmetry. And that's not possible in two dimensional time reversal symmetric system. Any time reversal symmetric system, a metal, you can gap it out by inducing some disorder or tunneling and open a gap without breaking time reversal symmetry. However, this is not possible on the surface of topological insulators. And so the question is to ask, what kind of strange topological order we can have on the surface of three-dimensional topological insulators? So then all these questions that I've been thinking about coming to a single play, where you have short range and they have long range entanglement on the surface and they all interact with each other. So we have a series paper recently about what can happen on the surface first of bosonic topological superconductors. And recently we have papers about fermionic topological superconductor or insulator, what can happen on the surface of them. And there's a paper actually appearing, I know we're submitting today, about what can happen on fermionic topological insulators. And this kind of result cannot be obtained if you start from a single particle picture where topological insulator or superconductor was originally discovered, because topological order requires intrinsic strong entanglement and strong interaction within the system. So if you start from a single band structure, a simple band structure, and add interaction, you cannot find what topological order is there. And that's why there has been 7 years between people can discover what is going on the surface if it has topological order. So, so we see that for all the long-range entangled states, if we add symmetry, they similarly split into more interesting structures and with different kind of properties. So we, and with this, I will conclude what we have done and what we think things are going.
Can you go back to the nice picture before? So in the short-range entanglement, there is the suspicion that it's well understood now. That there is a complete classification of all possible phases. Are you saying by this picture that there is that we are close to the same level?
We think we're closing.
Sorry?
We're closing in.
Okay.
So I shouldn't make the claim, but I think the general way of thinking is there, and we just need to figure out in different cases what's going on. So this is actually what I want to talk about, that starting from this scattered point in this blank diagram, we find more phases and more structures for not only the short-range entangled part, but also a long-range entangled part, and also the connection between them. So, and of course, there are a lot of unanswered questions, because, so I think the results I presented are all concerned with gap quantum phases, and it's natural to ask, is the story almost over for gap phases? Well, there are definitely open questions. For example, are there different types of long-range entanglements that we don't know yet? It is highly possible, and because we don't know, I cannot answer. And but also, for known type of long-range entanglement, do we already have a classification of the symmetry-protected short-range pattern on top of it? I think we're close, maybe in a year or two or something. So, but beyond that, there's a vast region which is uncharted, and I didn't even touch them in the previous part of my talk. That is the gapless region. Well, the gapless region is infinitely more interesting than gap region, because a gapless thing, a gapless material, if you knock on it, you will have a response to it, and unlike the gap things, which you slightly perturb it and nothing happens. So there's not much known about people know that there are unconventional gapless phases, but the theory is very not as well developed as for gap theories, and there's a huge space to be explored in this diagram. And moreover, there are phase transitions between all these phases. How are the phase transitions like? What universal properties they have? In the conventional phases, we know that we have a very well-developed theory for describing phase transitions between them. However, for unconventional theories, we don't know much yet. So where do we want to go from here? Basically, using this many-body entanglement point of view, using this quantum information idea, we hope that we can have an analytical understanding of what gapless phases can exist, what phase transitions are like between unconventional gap or gapless phases. Also, this many-body entanglement point of view can prove to be a very useful approach for doing numerical calculation on many-body entanglement system, like many people have been doing at Perimeter. That this is a so-called tensor network approach, because tensor network is a very natural way to incorporate entanglement into the description of a local system, and it's expected that it can grow into a brute force numerical tool for studying quantum many-body system, which does not have a sign problem or something like a quantum Monte Carlo simulation. Their relations to experiment, for example, whether we can discover non-abelian topological order, can we find new systems or more experimentally accessible system where we can see the signature of non-abelian topological order, and whether we are able to, starting from these all the new phases we discovered, can we explain high-temperature superconductivity. And finally, back to quantum information, how all these topological or symmetry-protected features can be used in quantum information for quantum memory, quantum state transmission, quantum computing, quantum error correcting, and etc. So that's what we hope to come out of this many-body entanglement point of view. Thanks.
So we have already 30 questions, but there is time for some more, if anybody has more questions.
So in your statement, you're looking at the 2D boundary of a 3D non-trivial phase.
Yes.
So then you're only looking at gapless topological order? Because if the boundaries are gapless, then...
The point is that the boundary can be gapped if you have strong interaction. But you have to enter a topologically ordered state. You cannot enter a trivial gap state. There must be topological order. And more interestingly, for topological insulators and topological superconductors, for some of them, we find that the topological order has to be non-abelian. So there's something very non-trivial going on this surface when you gap it out.
Okay.
smaller. So what is the evidence that you have closed the classification of the self of the semi protected spaces?
Sorry, symmetry protected spaces.
So you said that you feel you're close to the
classification. Is it symmetry? Is it short range or long
range?
A short range, I think.
I think
we're almost there. We maybe need some proof. Well, this is our physical argument. We cannot prove it yet, but definitely would be nice to have a proof that it's complete.
Which sort of physical arguments are used?
Oh, I'm just saying that we are starting from this short-range entangled picture and say everything should look like this. But we do need a proof that every short-range entangled state is indeed like this.
I mean, in absence of the proof, we have some.
Well, I don't expect much things out of this framework.
But why?
Because I think every short-range entangled state is like that.
What is the basis for
the basis to which is feeling this sense?
You think 3D is not really very different than 2D? Is that what you're saying?
If it's short-range entangled. In 3D, short-range entanglement will be like entangled cubes. And you put them together.
No. I think the question is even just in two dimensions.
Even in two dimensions.
Yeah.
Why is this proposed ansatz? So there is a claim, right? The claim is that this is a universal ansatz for short-range entanglements.
Mm-hmm.
And the question you're asking is
with sort of evidence or intuition or
yeah.
I don't know.
Okay,
is
so
the only thing that was proved was in 1D.
Yes, and because in 1D it's proved, we think that maybe higher dimension is similar. Yeah, or it can be using the matrix product space techniques.
So you think the technique used in 1D may generalize easily to 2 or 3D?
I don't know how easy the generalization is,
at least
until now.
The technique does not generalize. I mean, it's
maybe.
But if I understand properly, I mean, we've been looking at this for a while, including one of the science students, Nick, who is here. So is it fair to say first there is an ansatz, no? In two dimensions, that there is an ansatz that is made, and then it follows that if this answer is correct, then there is a classification which is mathematically denied.
Yes.
It's different kind of cohomology.
Yes.
But also, once you have, and there has been a lot of work done in this direction.
Yes.
But you have two dimensions,
yes.
Right? Where you have specific models for all these proposed phases.
Yes.
Right? So it's constructive.
Yes.
But I think, is it correct to say that there is no proof that you cannot go from one model for another?
Oh, that we are sure.
It's proof. No, whether you're sure, but is there a proof that you can go from one of these models, say, to another one?
Yeah, definitely, because just like in one dimension, if you have h, which is spin 1/2, you cannot go to spin 0.
Yeah.
So similarly, in the two dimension, the symmetry action on the edge is related to this group cohomology, which has a discrete classification. So you cannot just jump from one class to the other. If you want to go from one class to the other, just like going from spin 0 to spin 1/2, something has to happen.
So
about.
This argument has nothing to do with the underlying assumption that all the phases which are in entanglement match that answer that you are taking for granted.
It has, because of this structure in the bulk, then we can say, the symmetry act, how the symmetry acts on the boundary. If we can separate, we do not have a bulk entanglement structure like that, we cannot even say this.
Okay, but what I'm saying then is that mm-hmm. the proof that these phases are not connected, that they are really different phases, is also assuming that.
I see. You are saying that if I go to a bulk entanglement structure with some weird type of entanglement, I may go across.
Well, I'm asking, I'm really asking.
You talk about the symmetry of the thing. Understand what you mean when you talk about the symmetry of the boundary.
Effective symmetry action on the bounds, for example, whether it's a spin 0 or spin 1/2 on the boundary.
But in 2D, are you talking about Tohei with symmetry?
Yeah, symmetry acting on the edge. So, but still, I think the answer to that question is yes, because.
Sorry, what was my question?
The question said, do we know that the faces we constructed are indeed different from each other?
Yes.
A very nice way of seeing that is to gauge the symmetry and see what statistics we get in the gauge version of the symmetry. And we do know that the statistics are different. That doesn't depend on the short-range entangled pattern in the state. And that kind of statistics cannot change from one to the other just it's discrete and it cannot change continuously. So
that has no connection with the starting answers that you made.
So they're physical, whether you call it a proof or not, but I think physicists believe that this is why these faces must be different.
So when you said it, you understand the symmetry protected long range entangled. You mean for specific three-dimensional topological theories or general?
Oh, you mean whether there's a classification?
So no, when you say that you are close to understanding the effect of symmetry protection on long range entangled.
Yes.
So if there were a few spots on the slides, fractional one more, or you have So you mean that you are close to understand them in those three examples or in general long range?
So I think in general long range. So there's a mathematical framework developing at this point, which is not complete yet, but the picture is emerging, what the structure should be like. It's a general framework for saying for whatever topological phase, what can happen.
Any other questions? If not, let's thank Xi Heng.